Mike Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. Another week, another set of controversies in the Trump administration. The week closed with the resignation of White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer, the naming of a new communications director, and continued friction between the president and Attorney General Jeff Sessions.
That all came on the heels of President Trump's trip to Europe for the G20 summit, a trip that resulted in a change in U.S. policy in Syria. And that trip is where we start our latest conversation with contributor Art Sear. Always nice to see you.
Thank you, Mitch. Great to be here.
We are a couple of weeks removed from the G20 summit, but there are a handful of impressions that still linger in many minds. The first, maybe the U.S.'s place at the table. What did you see in that meeting that reflects what place the U.S. now occupies in the world order, if you will?
Well, given the fact that President Trump is unpredictable and has been critical of international organizations and cooperation, others loom larger, and that's all to the good. I don't think it's good for anyone in human terms or in structural and policy terms for one enormous country to dominate everything in international affairs. I think especially the fact that we have a very positive, very humanitarian, as well as democratic and law-abiding Germany under Chancellor Angela Merkel, whom I happen to admire a lot, very much playing a positive leadership role in Europe. If you have any sense of history, or even if you've just seen some movies and TV, you know that that's a huge change in just a little over a half century. There's no movement to abolish the G20 or any of the other network of organizations in the world and in regions. There's no movement to abolish the United Nations. That's a big change in American politics.
At the same time, there has been some rumbling about potentially deep cuts to funding for the United Nations, right?
Absolutely right. They don't have a natural constituency in this country, just like diplomacy in the State Department does not. No, that's nothing new. And I think they have a powerful enough constituency, and it makes very good practical sense for us to be involved. It's usually central support for the UN that gets hammered and cut and debated histrionically often in Congress. And that hasn't happened to the degree it has in the past, especially during the Reagan years most recently.
You mentioned the idea that there's not necessarily a natural constituency for the State Department either. A lot of attention's been paid to the relationship between the president and the attorney general, a little bit under the radar, but still some analysts are pointing to the relationship between the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, and the president, or perhaps a lack of relationship between the two. There's some who are saying he might step down, that this is a guy who's used to calling the shots, and when the Secretary of State doesn't necessarily have the president's ear, it's got to be frustrating for a guy like Rex Tillerson.
That makes a lot of sense. I'm also impressed by the fact that he clearly has a sense of public service. I think even if he's doing the job very appropriately from the public's point of view, there are benefits for his previous corporate home by being in that position.
And this is ExxonMobil we're talking about.
Exactly. I'm confident, I would certainly hope at some level, President Trump is making moves to keep his cabinet members around. He doesn't need a big exodus with all the other turmoil going on.
So let's go back to the G20 for just a moment and another story that came out of it. What we now know are two meetings that took place between Presidents Trump and Putin. Regardless of what comes out of the Russian meddling in the election probe, what is President Trump's interest in Russia?
Well, he's in the past had substantial business interests, which at some level I'm sure continue, and that's very much stage center in the media. Russia has a very weak economy, but they're rich in natural resources, and they're a very formidable conventional as well as, let's not forget, nuclear military power. It's all to the good that the heads of government of both nations concerning national security and international cooperation talk to one another. And that's why since the beginning of the Cold War, especially during the Eisenhower years, we've, even when things were very, very tough, much tougher than today and far more dangerous, sensible presidents and other American leaders give a lot of priority to trying to communicate with and cooperate with Russia and China and other major powers.
Okay, so to that end, the idea of cooperation, the Trump administration has apparently ended the CIA's covert program of arming anti-Assad rebels in Syria, much to the delight of Russia. What was in that decision for the United States?
I think we have an overarching interest in stability in that region. We have the best of intentions. I think we are a basically good-hearted country as well as people. Democracy, representative government is not going to emerge overnight in Syria. The Assad regime, not one defensible in our terms, nonetheless, one that has been an ally of ours in the Gulf War and is extremely important in combating terrorism. It's extremely important that we have stability in that region. The rebels were not a coherent or cohesive group. None of them, either ISIS or anti-ISIS, was, again, committed to the kind of representative government that we support. And I think basically we're making mischief when we arm hostile groups that aren't going to win, that don't share our values at all. So to me, it makes sense.
Is it wrong to couch this in terms of, I mean, there's some who term this as a Russian victory?
No, I don't think it's a Russian victory. We are technically collaborating in the fight against ISIS, although the Islamic State and related extremist terrorist criminal groups, the more we can collaborate positively with Russia, the better. And I think we should be giving emphasis to that. After the cruise missile strikes, President Putin very publicly announced that we would be ending ongoing, very detailed military cooperation, especially regarding our air forces. There's not only U.S. and Russian aircraft in the vicinity, but also Turkish aircraft, Israeli aircraft. It's a recipe for accidental war, and I think this will facilitate closer and more positive collaboration among the militaries involved.
Apparently, in the last 24 hours as we're having this conversation, or maybe longer, Israel is now providing humanitarian supplies to people along the Syrian border, which some are also pointing to as a sign of increasing commitment to stability in the region.
Yes, indeed. And ideally, it's not going to happen quickly, but ideally, given other pressures on Israel, this might be used as leverage, especially by astute American diplomatic leaders and others, to encourage more communication and rapprochement between Israel and various Arab and Islamic groups. It's all to the good.
All right, before we wrap up, you are just recently back from the UK, where Brexit is very much on people's minds, as are the results of the recent election, the parliamentary elections. What is the national mood like there? You were aware, London, right?
Yes, and also in Oxford for the annual lecture of Ditchley Park, a conference center with which I've been involved for many years and a very useful ally of our Clausen Center at Carthage, and experts to bring together with our students. Britain remains a very positive ally of the U.S. They are reconsidering the very narrow Brexit vote that led Prime Minister Theresa May to go full steam ahead to get out of the European Union. Our British friends are ultimately pragmatic, as are we, at least ultimately, collectively, and I'm confident that they will be able to work this out. Developments in Scotland are particularly important. It's only about 5 million people, but it's an extremely robust and active society as well as economy. The Scots provide a lot of things to the world at large, including our basic kind of market system, arguably, in very tangible terms, British nuclear weapons, and they continue to go in for very large-scale strategic submarines. Nuclear weapons are in Scotland. And the degree to which the British can work out an agreement with the European Union without exiting, the better. The Scots are fiercely and overwhelmingly committed to staying in the EU. The country overall is a very important member of NATO, so I hope they can work these things out. I do think Prime Minister Theresa May's days in office are numbered, given her substantial defeat of her and her government in the recent election.
Art Sear, thank you very much.
Mitch Tyke, always a pleasure.
Lake Effect contributor Art Sear is a professor of political economy and world business. He's the director of the Clausen Center for World Business at Carthage College in Kenosha. You can hear our past conversations with him at WUWM.com.